Welcome to Law Matters for 2026. Good to have your company for another year. This is our 16th year on air. Law Matters brought to you proudly by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. I'm Jodie Hoffman, and looking forward to sharing the studio and having a yarn with our communities and stakeholders within the legal system throughout the country this year. Of course, the topic of discussion for our first program is going to be what happened in Perth on Invasion Day on the 26th of January, where an explosive device was thrown into the crowd at the survival gathering in the heart of Perth. So we'll be talking today on the program to Sophie Stewart, who is the CEO of Social Reinvestment Western Australia, also chatting with Professor Pat Dudgeon, who is the Director of the Centre of Best Practice in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Suicide Prevention at the University of Western Australia. There has been a terrorism charge made against the suspect. The attempted bombing and alleges the attack on Aboriginal people and other peaceful protesters was motivated by a hateful, racist ideology. But first, I'm going to have a listen to this song, and saw this on the ABC a couple of weeks ago. Perhaps you did too. It's called No One Should Call This Place Home.
I've been to prisons like Banksia Hill, from Cobham to Cleveland, dumped like I'm landfill. I'm only 10 and so far from Guam. I should call this place home.
Yeah, she's great, isn't she? That is Emma Donovan and the Putbacks in a song called Leftovers. And before that, kicking off Law Matters for this program, No One Should Call This Place Home. I don't know if you saw that show a couple of weeks ago. Very powerful stuff. And the show was called Always... I have to get back to the name. It's gone. I've had a blank. But I'll give you the name of that during the program this week because you can head back and watch it on ABC iView. Well, here in Western Australia and I guess across the country, people were getting out to march and protest, but also to meet in unity on the 26th of January, Invasion Day. And here in Perth, it was a totally different story, a terrible act of terrorism happened on the streets of Perth, and to talk more about it and to try and unpack the impact that something like that has on our mob, I'm joined on the program by Pat Dudgeon, Professor Pat Dudgeon, who is the Director of the Centre of Best Practice in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Suicide Prevention at the University of Western Australia. Professor Dudgeon, thank you for your time. How are you? Welcome to the program.
I'm great, Jodie, and thank you for inviting me to share my thoughts.
Before we start, we've got a national audience, Pat, so perhaps tell them a bit about where you're from, who's your mob, and your involvement with mob for all of your life, really.
Okay. Well, I live and work in beautiful Noongar Boodja, that's in Perth in Western Australia, but my people actually are from the Kimberley, so I'm from the Bardi people of the Kimberley. And my family are the Gregories. Aboriginal name is Mungut. I was born and grew up in Darwin, so I say a part of my heart always belongs to Larrakia Nation as well. But I came to Perth to study psychology back in the Ice Age. And I loved it here and I've stayed. But my background is that I am a psychologist. And I looked at how, you know, psychology, which is a Western discipline, can better serve our people. And back in those days, it was very much it excluded all different cultural groups, but it's changed significantly since. My work has been very much in the education and research areas. And I think my big contributions were leading the Working Together book, which really put Indigenous mental health on the front and centre. So that was one of my proud moments. Mm. And also the Solutions at Work report, where we looked at Indigenous suicide, and it wasn't just a clinical issue. You know, we saw suicide as a very much a... part of the story of colonisation, and that to make change there needed to be community engagement at every single level, but also we needed to look at cultural solutions too. And recently, probably being very much involved in social emotional wellbeing and working with mob to develop concepts of social emotional wellbeing and what that means to our people, because definition of well-being is holistic and encompasses all parts of our well-being, whether it's our body, you know, our mind and body, our connection to our family and communities, to our culture, to our country, to our ancestors, but not forgetting that this is in a backdrop of a story of colonisation and some really powerful social determinants. So, you know, our well-being needs to look in that light, but look from that perspective. But also there's some great strengths too. So I think that's where I've been witnessing Indigenous mental health and well-being going towards, which I think is really promising.
You know, and you said, yeah, there is some great strength there, but there's also some very heavy loads carried by mob, historically speaking, and moving forward, and just living in a society where there is still so much racism. The Invasion Day rally in Boolloo led to WA's first terrorism charge. You had nearly 3,000 people gathered in the city, in unity, as happens every year, not just in Boolloo, but across the country. And... this has been an attempted bombing of a peaceful gathering. What were your first thoughts when you heard what had happened?
Oh, look, I was very shocked that it had gone that far. But I think that for our mob, we've been, the failed referendum, for example, brought a lot of racism out. I think it was always there, but it was just not as blatant, not as expressed. So this was a new low. And I think that a lot of our people, I'd think twice before going to a protest, for sure. But we still need to do it. I think that there'll be more caution, and I think that protests and rallies might require a bit more organised and collaborative organisation working with the police and security. We should continue to have our voice, but I think that and it's not an isolated incident. You know, on the wave of this expressed racism, this person took it upon himself to make a bomb and throw it into the crowd. So, you know, some people might say, oh, it's just a one-off, but it isn't. I think that that given the increased expressions of racism that we've been seeing, particularly on the lead up to the referendum and then afterwards, I think that is a symbol of some of the, probably a minority group views towards Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people. So it's a serious matter, and I'm concerned about the psychological impact that will have on our people, and also the reactions that our people will have. I get worried that, especially younger people, will turn their, they will feel turn their backs against their white allies, and I think that's an important thing to remember too, to acknowledge that this was a significant and evil act. I'm glad it's been it has been formally charged as an act of terrorism. I think that's appropriate, but still in all, we still need to continue to have our voice. We need to stand. We have a lot of allies that stand with us, and we have to remember them as well.
Look, that's the truth. So many supporters of our course, Pat Dudgeon, but we're talking today on Law Matters about a bomb containing nails and ball bearings and chemicals that was thrown into the peaceful crowd of 2,500 to 3,000 people on 26th of January, Survival Day, Invasion Day, different names for it from our mob. Thankfully, the bomb didn't explode. But it was 9 days from when this 31-year-old man threw the homemade fragment bomb into the crowd to when police charged him with engaging in a terrorist act. After the event, the WA police met on a couple of occasions with Aboriginal community leaders and elders in Boolloo to discuss, and I know there was some concern that why isn't this being charged with an act of terrorism when it clearly was. The police said certain investigations had to happen before that could occur, and that took 9 days. So I think community are a lot more relieved now that it has at least been acknowledged as that act of terrorism. It's a massive thing, though, isn't it? First charge of this type to come out of Western Australia. But, you know, I know at the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA, even our Facebook page is so caught up with keyboard warriors who just want to vent their racism about anything that's going on in the community. It's frightening.
Yes, and I think we do. I think that there'll be significant system change that'll come from that incident. But also, I'd like to see more programs, and we're actually working on one now. But, ours is just one of there should always be lots of programs for Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people. But we're looking at developing a toolkit that our mob can use to navigate all that racism, because especially on social media, as you said it, Jody, they're keyboard warriors and they're a bit, anonymous. So I think we need to do more to centre our own people in their cultural strength and identity, and remind them of the strengths and the connections, the strong connections they have, but also debunk some of those racist myths that get around, and also to tell people, and I do it myself, to ignore it sometimes. Sometimes, you know, I feel like having an argument with people on social media, but it's best just to delete and block.
Pat Dudgeon is my guest, Professor Pat Dudgeon from the University of Western Australia. Pat, I'm sure I'd be correct in saying that, like myself, you would remember the old days of 30, 40 years ago of taking to the streets and protesting, and we had our placards and the chant was really, really strong about, you know, what we wanted for our human rights and change moving forward. Back then, the crowd was, you know, largely a First Nations crowd, but what has happened over the years is that we have collected along the way so many non-Indigenous supporters, haven't we?
Yes, indeed. And, yeah, I was smiling, actually. You couldn't see me, but I was smiling when you were talking about that. I do remember those early days. And we were largely, as you said, Indigenous and very small. Now the number of people that gather is really enheartening, but the number of allies as well. So it has changed.
And we've seen that with, you know, events like the Black Lives Matter protests across the country of recent years. But also I do remember talking last year on the program with the mob at 13 Yarn, which provides, you know, non-judgmental voices on the phone for our mob to call out and just ask for, you know, an ear to listen and some advice, which doesn't judge anybody. And they were saying how much their numbers of calls increased after the Voice to Parliament and how disheartening that was and how people just felt so crushed with, is this the country I'm living in?
Yes. And that's a good sort of evidence base of our people's, you know, responses to increased expressions of racism. And it is real and it is happening. But as I said before, I think, you know, we have to remember that the racists are a small group. More people support Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander people and culture. Many people, you know, they're very proud of Indigenous culture and they're very, they will stand by us and fight for our rights as well. So they're the ones we have to focus on, and to also remember, people have to remember their cultural strengths. We belong to a culture that goes back over 65,000 years and lived in this continent. And we have, great connections, not only to each other, but to country. And so we bring a lot of strength, and we do have a lot of strength in our culture. So we have to remember that, because that's what will take us forward.
And I think it's important as well to note that, you know, when you grow up Aboriginal in Australia, racism becomes part of life, unfortunately, but we do get some strength and resilience out of that. So the racism component isn't a new issue. It's always been there. So I guess, you know, I saw one of your comments recently, Pat, in relation to what happened on Survival Day, that, you know, this just brought things to a new low.
Yes, that's correct. I agree. So it's not, racism isn't anything new for us. It's been there from the very, you know, at the very beginning. But this is something different. It is a new low. And I'm going to certainly be putting some of my energies into looking at developing programs that support our people and remind them of their cultural strength and that they can navigate, that we can live through this. But at the same time, we do have to acknowledge, you know, some people will be worried to go out for public gatherings and protests. So things have changed a little bit, and I hope that this is a one-off. I'm glad the government has taken a hard line on it, that, you know, we had to wait till they gathered the evidence so they could, you know, do a terrorism charge. But that's good, you know. I think punitive action needs to be taken to stop this kind of, ridiculous expressions. But in it all, our people have weathered the storms. You know, our mothers, fathers, they've always fought for our rights. So I guess the struggle continues, as even though, you know, I wish it was different, But for us, we will always be fighting for our rights, and we will get them one day.
Professor Pat Dudgeon, what would your advice be to people who were shaken by the events of the 26th of January in Bulloo, whether they were there at the actual event or just heard about it down the track? What would your advice be in terms of staying strong?
Okay, well, first of all, acknowledging that it was a traumatic event, whether you were there in person or whether, you know, you heard about it, you felt it. Usually if something happens in Indigenous Australia, we all have a connection with it. So so to acknowledge that it is that was a terrible act, so acknowledge that, your feelings of being uneasy are you know, to be acknowledged as well. But to remember that this was a one-off, and from probably a wave of minority races, that largely there's more allies than racists, and that to connect in with your family and friends, talk about it with them, you know, discuss it, and spend time with family and community. And also, if you are still feeling a bit disconnected, go out to country, take time to just centre yourself and gather yourself in. So, yeah, connect to country, you know, remember your spirituality and stay strong through it all.
Professor Pat Dudgeon, it's been a few years since I've had a yarn with you, but I've enjoyed it, even though the topic was a pretty serious one. Thank you for your words. Appreciate it. You are the Director of the Centre of Best Practice in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Suicide Prevention at the University of WA. I think probably the last time I saw you, you were heading up the Centre for Aboriginal Studies at Curtin Uni. So we're going back some years there, aren't we?
I've moved universities. Same person, though.
Same person. Pat Dudgeon, thank you for your time and your words
my
today.
My pleasure, Jodie.
Take care.
My pleasure.
She's lovely. Professor Pat Dudgeon. And look, if any of the issues we've talked about have raised any concerns for you, you can always call 13 Yarn. 13 Yarn is run by Mob, and they're there to provide crisis support 24/7 to yarn with you without judgment and provide a confidential and culturally safe space to yarn about your needs, worries or concerns. Their number is 139276. 139276. This is the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, our first program for a new year. Not that we're new to this program. We've been going for 16 years now. And a shout out to our listeners around the country listening in through the National Indigenous Radio Service. In Western Australia, obviously through 100.9 FM Noongar Radio, where the program is broadcast from, but also our mates in Derby on 6DBY and in Kununurra on Wurundjeri Media. Good to have you all tuned in. We've got another big year coming up this year, so hope you can stay with us. Let's have a listen to this song, the great Wurrumpi Band with Weema Tudor, All the Kids.
Oh,
legendary Warumpi Band here on the Law Matters program, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Jodie Hoffman with you this hour. We are nearly at the anniversary of the National Apology, turning the clock back 18 years, can you believe? I remember taking the kids out of school and heading into the city. It was still dark when we left home. I think it started at about 5 in the morning, and watching on the screens there the apology that came from Kevin Rudd. And it was a very emotional time on so many levels for so many people. But I wanted to let you know about a local thing happening in Boolloo, where you can join Yokai for a free community event as they come together to reflect and honour the significance of this moment in our history. This will take place on Friday the 13th of February. This program is repeated, so that's why I'm giving you the date. You may well hear the program and the event has already happened. So Friday the 13th of February for those in Boolloo, Perth, at 10:30 to 12:30 lunchtime, Yokai Healing Centre at 174 Treasure Road in Queen's Park. Join Yokai for the free community event commemorating 18 years since the National Apology. Friday 13th of February, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Yokai Healing Centre, 174 Treasure Road, Queen's Park. Coming up shortly on the program, going to be having a chat with CEO of Social Reinvestment Western Australia, Sophie Stewart, will join us. But first, let's have a listen to Dan Sultan.
Surprise. Oh, get it. You have won my heart.
Got a beautiful voice, hasn't he? Dan Sultan and Goddess Love. Here on the Law Matters program, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. And at the top of our program, I played that song, No One Should Call This Place Home. Then I had a total mental blank about what show I saw it on, but it was a few weeks ago, and it was hosted by Tony Armstrong, and it was called Always Was Tonight. And it was billed by the national broadcaster as a sharp, satirical special set to decolonise the news one headline at a time. It was great viewing and had that song that actually brought a tear to your eyes when it, you know, it had children singing to the tune of I Still Call of Australia Home, and showing them behind bars and locked up because, of course, the age of criminal responsibility in Western Australia is only 10 years old, which is absolutely horrific. So if you wanted to check out that show, you can watch it on ABC iView. And, yeah, Always Was Tonight, hosted by Tony Armstrong. Good to talk to Professor Pat Dudgeon earlier in the program, talking about the attempted bombing on a peaceful group of 2,500 to 3,000 people gathered in solidarity and unity on the 26th of January, Invasion Day. Sophie Stewart was there, CEO of Social Reinvestment Western Australia. Sophie, welcome to the program. This is our first program for the year and glad to have you part of it. How are you?
Oh, thank you, Jodie. Thank you so much for inviting me and having me. I'm doing okay. I think that a lot of us who are there are still processing and reeling what happened just a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, it's absolutely horrific. You were there, Sophie. Tell us what happened, and were you aware of what was going on at the time? Because I understand that there was so much confusion. Police were pushing people back and saying, you need to leave. Nobody knew what was going on. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think that's one of the really difficult things was the amount of confusion on the day. So I was there with my sister and some of my friends and as well as some colleagues. And I think there was certainly the object was thrown into the crowd. We were standing in the crowd when that happened, and some people reported it straight away. What we saw from where we were was we saw a couple of like police looking around on the ground for quite some time. And, you know, my sister was like, hey, have you noticed the police are like checking everyone's bags on the ground? And we kind of noticed that. But it wasn't until a whole line of police got up onto the stage while rally organisers were speaking that it became apparent that something was happening. I think what was really difficult for crowd members is that police didn't communicate effectively to the organisers. They didn't use loudspeakers. They didn't get on the mic. They didn't use sirens. They didn't use text messages. So we had no idea that they were trying to evacuate us when a line of police started to get up onto the stage and push people off. They eventually, one of the elders who was leading got the mic and said, everybody needs to move back and move away. There's been a bomb threat. So that's the only information we got for hours. So we heard that, we all moved into the mall, and we started moving that way once we'd heard that. But police formed a pretty intense line and were pushing people. And I wasn't at the front, so I couldn't see that line of pushing. But for those of us in the middle of the crowd, what was really concerning is that we all got herded into the mall and we were corralled in there for over an hour waiting for the march to begin. We had no indication that a bomb had been thrown, that there had been anything more than like a threat called in, because when someone says bomb threat, what you assume is someone's got on the phone and called something in and they're just precautionary investigating. There's no communication, no further communication from police to anybody in not at the front line of the crowd. We didn't hear from them for an hour. We didn't see them. No, they didn't walk up and down with megaphones or even up and down to talk to people in the crowd. We were waiting there with no clue that it happened. And we probably wouldn't have waited in that mall section, 2,500 of us squeezed into that section of the Murray Street Mall, if we'd known a bomb had been thrown, because there could have been secondary attackers, there could have been other people. And that's probably where a big amount of concern comes for me, not just in the way that police really didn't engage effectively with the community and community leaders to communicate safely with the protesters that were there, but also that really where we were moved to was actually quite a significant public safety risk if there had been second attackers or anyone else who wanted to harm us, because we were essentially kind of corralled into an even tighter space, like sitting ducks for over an hour before the march began. With no communication or information. And they have tools to do that, you know, they have got instant tools to text message and stuff. So I think that there is a lot to be desired on the day in terms of response that I think needs to be reviewed and looked at by WA Police and improved, so that, you know, it's a miracle that the bomb didn't go off this time. So we've got this miracle chance to improve how things happen.
Oh, look, yeah. Thank goodness it didn't. Look, it would have been absolutely horrific. There would have been multiple casualties or deaths had this bomb detonated. And like all West Australians, I imagine the eyes of the country are on the way this is handled as well, because we know that it took 9 days before it was declared a terrorist attack. The person responsible, a 31-year-old male from Perth's northern suburbs, is in custody, so that's a big tick. We know that on the day it was not only just mob gathered there for this significant date, but also so many of our supporters, such as so many of the people that are involved in your organisation, Sophie Stewart Social Reinvestment WA, where one of your core values is to seek to create safer communities. It's abhorrent, isn't it, when you think that there was that much hatred that it led to that on the day?
Yeah, honestly, that's been the really difficult part to comprehend, I think. It has been that rise in significant racism towards Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, but also the nationalism that's risen and people who seem to be emboldened across the country to act out racism in an extreme violent way. And I think that we can't look at this rise not in the context. I think the no vote has emboldened a lot of people to be more openly racist. I think that the referendum, I think that even in the lead up to this January 26th, there have been ongoing conversations for, you know, for years and years and years, but really public conversations for at least over a decade on, you know, changing the date of January 26th of all sorts of things around that, because it represents, you know, the first fleet arrival, British colonisation in this country, which is not representative of this whole country. And for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, you know, it marks the beginning of invasion, dispossession, all of this. But in the lead up to this January 26th, I really saw a change in media coverage around it that was very much like, celebrate this or you're not one of us. That was the message I think was being sent by the mass media. And I can't help but think that that has also emboldened. And we're hearing that from some political leaders at the moment, that same kind of message. Mm. And I think that that has emboldened people to be racist. And we, you know, we live in this community. We live in a multicultural community. And there's simply no place for hatred and violence in our community. And I think that that's a really, really important thing for all Australians and all people from Bulu, Perth, for us to consider. This impacts the public safety of anybody who has ever wanted to go to a public place and protest, engage in sharing their voice, or even sharing their views online.
My guest is Sophie Stewart, CEO of Social Reinvestment Western Australia. Sophie, after the events of 26th of January in Bulu, Perth, Social Reinvestment hosted a community gathering, a gentle, trauma-informed space for people to come together and share food and connect and access support. How did that go down?
It was a really beautiful evening. We had about between 80 and 100 people turn up. So there was clearly, I think, a strong desire for people to come to that. And I mean, we had, you know, everything from, I mean, there was like pizza, ice cream, but there was also a beautiful water welcome from Auntie Robin Collard. There was a yarning circle. There was some trauma-informed education for everybody. We had counsellors from Wanganui Aboriginal Corporation offering, you know, just being there to offer support. We had art activities, we had take action stations, and we also actually did a lived experience workshop where people had the opportunity to have their say. So it was a really healing night, I think, for so many people that attended, and it was a really mixed crowd, you know, of both mob and people from all different walks of life who'd supported and attended or impacted by this. But the lived experience, I think, exercise was really important because we heard from people who were there and people who've been really deeply impacted by it too. So people from the Aboriginal community and then people who were there at the protest. And we sort of heard what they wanted. And there's some really clear things that come out about what people who were there wanted. And the first is really about truth-telling and how truth-telling needs to be a really important part of building greater social cohesion and tackling racism. And that truth-telling, you know, about our history and about the ugly parts of our history needs to happen in schools and in workplaces and all across, and there needs to be comprehensive resourcing for that. I think people talked a lot about, you know, obviously wanting consequences for anti-racism and accountability in that, consequences for racism, sorry. So, you know, accountability for people who were being racist. And that's not just about, you know, that morning the terrorism charges had finally been laid, which was, you know, a relief to a lot of people there. But also, you know, what are the consequences? I have seen a huge upsurge in racist comments on Facebook. From media, some really, really, you know, coverage that does not, I think, meet anti-racist standards, and also some from political leaders. So what are the real genuine consequences for racism in this country before it gets to a violent point, so people understand that that's not acceptable here. I think people talked about also really about how do we prevent this from happening in the first place, you know, not just punitive responses, but how do we de-radicalise? How do we integrate people into the community and build a safer, more harmonious community, you know, from the get-go? At the first signs where young men are being pulled into these like movements, how do we integrate those people back into the mainstream community? How do we de-radicalise them, and how do we prevent them from getting there in the first place? And then I think the last thing we really heard was about police accountability. So, you know, both reviewing and improving their actions next time, and also looking at better community engagement, and particularly better Aboriginal community engagement for all police officers and people who are going to rallies.
All right. Sophie, good to speak to you on the program. We're all very relieved that bomb did not go off. Appreciate you sharing your thoughts of being there on the day and the follow-up wraparound care for community to have a safe space to go. You know, what was really disheartening was I know that on the invite that you put out to community to come along, that people had to register via email, and the address would then be given to keep it a safe space. How sad is that, hey?
Oh, it was so sad. We actually had to get security for the first time for one of our events. We managed to get a great Aboriginal-run security agency, but we've never experienced that level of racism or intensity on an event. It's just a community gathering.
Yeah, well, let's hope that this example is held up as an example of what not to do in this country, and that we never have to deal with anything like this again in the future. Sophie Stewart, CEO of Social Reinvestment WA, thanks as always for your time. We'll chat again throughout the year, no doubt.
No doubt. Thank you for having us.
Sophie Stewart joining us on the program. This is the Law Matters program, first program back on air for 2026. Good to have your company. And I'm thrilled to let you know that in a couple of minutes, I'm going to be chatting with Karina Martin, who is the Chief Executive of Aboriginal Family Legal Service, because there's a very important week that we're about to embark upon, and that is Ochre Ribbon Week. Karina Martin joins me in a moment. Stay tuned.
Something's been. Something tells me.
Now, that's a band by the name of Black Storm and House of Fire. We don't have much more time left on our Law Matters program for today, and unfortunately unable to chat with Karina Martin, Executive Officer of Aboriginal Family Legal Centre. But we will definitely have a yarn with these guys on a future program. They do an incredible job. I did want to talk about Ochre Ribbon Week. The Ochre Ribbon Campaign was established by Aboriginal Family Legal Services in 2015 to raise awareness about the devastating impacts of family and domestic violence on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. This is a nationally recognised campaign that runs annually between February 12th and 19th and is a community-driven and culturally focused initiative. So if you want to find out any more about that, they have a great website. Just go to www.afls.org.au. But yeah, Aboriginal Family Legal Services do an incredible job within our community throughout the state. And I know that in previous years, the Aboriginal Legal Service has taken part in stalls and events throughout the year. Very, very important service. So Ochre Ribbon Week running from the 12th to the 19th of February. Check out their website to find out more about the services. Don't Silence the Violence, 12th to 19th of February. That website again, www.afls.org.au. Well, it's great to have our program back on air for another year. As I mentioned, it's our 16th year on air too. So a massive shout out to our listeners and supporters, some new listeners and some from way back when. We have all of our programs, by the way, from 2010 onwards on the website of the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA at www.als.org.au. We also have a free call number, 1-800-019-900, 1-800-019-900, if you need legal support or representation anywhere in Western Australia. We've got 12 offices across the state. So, yeah, sing out if we can do anything. And check out our Facebook page, which is kept really up to date with news and events and just stuff that might interest you. You know, whether it's to do with the legal sector or employment or the arts, you know, plenty happening on to keep involved and keep up to date with what's happening. Thank you for your company. We only got a couple of minutes left on the program and we're going to take you out with the Wedgetail Eagle Band and a song called Black Boy. Take care.
I'm just a black boy. Yeah, I'm just a black boy on the back of the yard. But I'm just a black boy, I know what's going on. Lady's my father, my mother in the sky. The lady's my father, my mother in the sky. I stand to prove for people I won't ever let them die. So look at you white boys, the word has got around. So look at you white boys, the word has got around. That you would stay legal, I'm gonna hit you down. I want.